Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Katie Hoogendam. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author, and sometimes that author has other talents too, and in this case, our guest is a broadcaster as well. We get a glimpse into their lives, we ask them about their work, what prompts them to write, and we have an opportunity to hear them read. Today, we're very pleased to have Katie with us. Between caring for her pony, alpaca, and toddler, Katie Hoogendam attempts to write poetry, essays, and fiction. On an ideal day, she can do all of the above and spend time in her basement lair working on her latest art project. In a former life, Katie was a high school English, amongst other things, teacher, and currently she works part-time as a freelance editor and hosts Carpe Noctem with Meerkat. Two of her poems will be published in the anthology Hill Spirits 2, and she has taken part in several public poetry readings recently. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
So, you're a poet. When did you start writing? Is it your preferred form for a special reason?
I don't know if it's my preferred form. I think it comes naturally out of one part of my brain, which is fortunate. But I had a really excellent poetry professor in my undergrad life named Jack Riddle. And he taught a selection about four different classes over the years that you kind of moved up in. And he was very inspiring to me. So I think that sort of laid the groundwork for me.
Do you experiment with other forms of writing then?
Yes, I think probably the easiest or whatever, you know, sort of just happens from my brain are essays. I feel pretty comfortable in that area, though I feel that it's doing something different in my, you know, my mind is doing some other form of Tetris when I'm when I'm writing essays as opposed to poetry.
And so what projects do you have on hand at the moment?
Right now, I'm trying to write a novel, which is not natural for me, but that's why I'm doing it. As a former high school teacher, as you mentioned, I have a heart for kids of that age. And so I'm attempting sort of an adolescent lit book, and mostly just to see if I can do it. You know, I'm working on several different poetry projects sort of at once. So
well, tell us about some of those poetry projects.
Well, I've realized over the years that I've been kind of building a chapbook around themes connected to my relationship with one of my sisters and my mother. So I'm trying to kind of see what happens when I pull some of my old poems on those themes together and challenging myself to write new poems sort of on the same theme. And but then other things keep getting in the way too, things about the body and things about being a woman. And so I don't know what it's really turning into, but it has something to do with women, my mom, my sister, my body.
Oh, it might turn into several things.
Maybe.
So when you're going to write a poem, how do you approach that?
I find that when I sit down to write a poem with that in mind, nothing happens. So I usually end up making coffee or something more nefarious, probably. A lot of writers say that a sentence comes to mind or something comes unbidden from somewhere, you know, the deep river myth or whatever. It pops into your mind and you, if you're lucky, you catch it, you know, kind of like trying to catch a fish with your hands. And sometimes that happens to me, and I find that if I obey and I write it down, often the rest will pour out. And if I don't, I forget it at my own, you know, peril. So that's sort of the poems just come, and then sometimes they're worth keeping and sometimes they're just emptying of my subconscious mind.
So do you have a special time of the day when you sort of let your mind go that special place and hopefully something pours out? Or
Writer Anne Lamott once said, you know, whatever great thoughts you have after 10 p.m. are probably terrible thoughts. And you could just, you know, try to go to bed.
Right.
I don't think time of day matters for me. I think it's my willingness to be receptive or not. So it's my own sort of ability to, whether I'm being sensitive to that or not.
Are there any special kinds of poetry you like better than others?
Well, my mentor, Jack, was all about free verse. And so that's where I sort of, you know, fell into that. But then over the past couple of years, I've been experimenting with different forms just because I think something happens. You know, something happens when you impose structure. Lord knows I need structure in my life in general. So, right. So I'm trying different forms now. And
so what are you trying?
I just did a collection of haikus for fun. That was mm-hmm. fun. And that's my current thing. And sonnets. And I don't have any plan in mind at the moment, but that's my current.
Well, sometimes they say that writing with a strict form is actually very freeing.
Yes.
So do you find that?
Like growing up with rules, which I didn't. So I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, if you are listening. In a way, it is freeing. Yeah, it's like mastering a craft and then finding your own spin on it, you know? Right. So there's something about it that's very different from free verse. You know, it's like over the years, the glacial till, the geography that forms to make rivers, right? And then you walk down and you see the river moving through the crevices, and then you see water in a whole different way because of what years have done to it, how the rock is contextualizing the water. And that's kind of what form does, I think, mm-hmm. for me. It contextualizes my ideas in a way that I couldn't do without it.
Yeah. That's an interesting perspective for sure. Perhaps you could read us a poem or two.
Sure. I think I'll read one from the anthology, which is the Hill Spirits Anthology. That's the Northumberland Hills Anthology of Northumberland County Writers. So this is called Holy Saturday Cross Country. Morning. We are driving from Canada to Beulah, macrocosm to microcosm. Canada, so big, so lumbering, so much a country made up of its inhabitants, earnest, optimistic. And Beulah, a tiny town in the tiny pinky of a corporeal state, Michigan. A hand, peninsular, connected to the rest of the nation by stitches. Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, a Frankensteinian afterthought. A one-handed state, able only to pat itself on the back, no clapping. Beulah, a small town, and like most towns, full of stories. We go there midway between death and resurrection, because my parents, like most parents, are dying. My mother, the fragile threads of memory snapping like spider filament under a heavy dew, and my father, a heart weary of beating for everyone else, his father, his mother, his brother, his wife, now shrinking, a heart that keeps on taking a beating, a symphony, a timpani, death metal, troops retreating. My parents' beacons, lights like those on the Frankfurt Pier, Ed and Sally, red and green, visible in a storm, marking space, dutiful, warning. Gatsby lights, lights to make the sailor anticipate shore, a landing, hot coffee, an end to the vastness of Lake Michigan, which is really a sea. Nothing for days to mark the horizon, a desperation, vertigo, windigo. One may as well as be lost in the Atlantic or Pacific. Romantic notions of sailing, whaling, trading, now clearly sophomoric, sophorific. In this midnight darkness, no green and red light beckoning or pulling. Just you and your crew in the long night, dark night of the soul. Or so St. John of the Cross dubbed it, but not like a dub poet. More like my sister who lost her mind so many years back, who lost her mind but whose heart is in the right place. But maybe we, the doctors, the shrinks, my parents, me, were all wrong. We tried to bring it back with haloperidol, to reel it in like Moby with clozapine, all the intrusions she found so obscene. The pushing, prodding, talking, strapping, shooting, the kneels, the backless shifts exposing. And all of that in the wrong direction, if her mind was actually unlost, simple wanderlust. If it, as we all do, wandered from its post, a courageous act, really, while her heart, like a good and proper schoolgirl, remained in place, the right place. Oh, our tainted geographics. When one organ strains, it is a malady, most especially the brain, that particular flesh we so try so hard to contain. It drifts, and such moves are continental, consequential, penitential, like saints on knees en masse. It is Holy Saturday, after all. And now we cross the border with border guards who assess our civic righteousness, our right to pass, our movement from one place to another in their grasp. And if they detect a hint of sarcasm on my breath like wine, and if I fumble while passing my passport, I may not pass. I may be held in the no man's land between Canada and the United States, neither here nor there. And at what moment exactly did Christ disappear? Did he know what it would feel like to be between two places? We call it Holy Saturday, Saturday sacred, set apart, like flying in an airplane, trapped between departure and arrival, no man's land, and yet the cabin is full. Is that where my sister's mind went? Is that why my parents, transfigured into beacons, red and red and green nautical lights, calling her mine forever home? And now I am on my way home, border crossed, shored by a man I love and a child I cannot explain. Flesh of my flesh, yes, but somehow more than the conflation of sperm and egg. I will never know of what stuff he is truly made. The guardrails blur as we pass. A twilight settles. Night falls around the cedars. Deer approach and then disappear. A figment of my imagination.
Well, thank you, Katie. And now we'll take a short break.